podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Welcome to All About Android, episode 94, recorded on January 29th, 2013, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Ron Richards, and I'm joined with Gina Trevani.
Hello. We miss Jason.
Yes,
we're going to make do without him.
Yes, we do. Jason is not here, but in his place, in his stead, is the talented and much smarter than me, Mr. Kevin Purdy. How you doing, Kevin?
Hello.
Welcome back. I think you were like our first guest, I think, back in the beta phase, if I remember correctly.
I was a beta guest, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So welcome back. It's good to have you. Thanks for coming in, filling in for Jason.
Not a problem. Great to be here.
Excellent. So this week, I got to admit, Gina and I were working on the rundown all day today. We're working on what stories. We got a pack show. We're going to be talking about a whole bunch of new hardware stuff coming, some rumors, some more Google I.O. rumors. We've got some numbers, some of our favorite type things, some market share numbers and the like, as well as packed with apps and news and all the fun things that you love with Android. So that said, let's dive right into the news.
I think kind of the biggest non-story, or at least the biggest story that didn't get as much coverage maybe as it should have, was that as of this past Saturday, it's now illegal to use your phone on another carrier without your original carrier's permission. When I first saw this headline, I thought, that must be from The Onion. That's not possible. But luckily, Kevin kind of jumped on it and wrote this great piece for IT World, kind of explaining how this happened, why this happened. Kevin, make me understand. What is going on? What do you mean I can't unlock my phone without permission from my original carrier?
Well, so to clarify, unlocking means taking your phone, and most phones are made kind of so they can operate on one or two carriers. Verizon gives you a phone that operates best on Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, et cetera. Unlocking means that if you go to Europe or in some cases in the U.S., like between AT&T and T-Mobile, there's a little leeway. You can take your phone and just use it on any other carrier with a different SIM card or whatnot. Up until now, it's basically been the case that you can ask your carrier for an unlock, but if they don't give you one, you can usually find a program to unlock it, or you can figure out some other way to do it, or certain hacks will do it too. So up until now, that's been allowed under the DMCA. The DMCA, you might remember, is a law from a little while back that was all about copyright and circumvention and things like that. It made an exception for unlocking, saying that, because of the way the carriers lock people into their contracts, you should be able to unlock. Well, in October of 2012, they decided that the Register of Copyright and the Librarian of Congress, those are real titles, but actual people, they decided that, well, no, this exception doesn't exist anymore, basically because there's so many options now. And wireless is very competitive, so we should not allow folks to unlock their phones without their carrier's permission. So that went into effect Saturday. They had a 90-day window on it for people to kind of buy a phone if they really wanted to unlock it, but that's gone now. So now you have to ask permission from Verizon, Sprint, or whomever to unlock your phone.
So, and there's some kind of petition or something, right, to overturn this decision?
Yes, and it's aimed right at the White House. It's picked up thousands upon thousands of signatures. I don't know exactly what inroad it might have to do so. It was an act of Congress. I think they'd actually have to change the law to undo it. But, I don't think it's going to actually shake too many people to their core, but it is kind of just one more thing that now we have to ask permission to do.
Well, so the first question I had, aside from the legal aspect and whether or not this is a case of, our esteemed congressman not knowing, not understanding technology, but do the carriers have an operational or logistic way to handle this? I mean, is there now a form you got to fill out, or do you got to call, or how does it work?
I unlocked a phone once to sell it, and in my case, it was calling T-Mobile. And I think they pretty much said after 90 days with any phone, they would let you unlock. I know that other carriers are less forgiving. Basically, we all know the smartphone model. They sell you a $600 device for $200, and they know they're going to make that up over time because you're in a smartphone contract. Basically, carriers want to make sure that they get back all the money they can before they allow you to, fly off to a prepaid or, European carrier. So, I mean, that's what they have. That's all they have to keep us in is just financial constraints.
It just seems so. Gina, I'm right. Your summary of it, thinking it was an Onion article, I think was spot on. When I read it, I did a double take.
and of course, I think it's important for us as nerds who care to try to change these laws. And I hope that We the People petition for the White House at least get some sort of response from the administration. I think you have to get so many signatures in order for the administration to actually address it. But, you know, my brain always goes to that place of like, but if I unlock my phone, are they really going to know, like, without asking permission? You know, will they know? Will the hack still work? Are they really going to come after? What are they going to do? Carrier who hasn't given permission so T-Mobile gives permission after 90 days. After 90 days, you can do whatever you want. But if I'm on another carrier and I want to unlock, or I'm going to Europe for the week and I want to use another SIM card, what are they going to do? You know, are they really going to hunt me down and be like, no, you know, and how would they do it?
I think that they would go after the folks who make phone unlocking software. Right. Which you can pretty easily find on the internet. You know, it doesn't take deep, deep research to find phone unlocking tools for your phone. I presume, much like most copyright and file sharing issues, they'll go after the, the crackers and app makers that make that possible.
Right.
Well, it's certainly
that would stink.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense, but I'll be curious. I mean, I wonder if we're heading into territory similar to the whole. Napster, Nutella kind of stuff, where are we going to end up with? What is the name of that woman who got slammed with the MP3s that she downloaded? What was her name?
Oh,
like Jamie or something like that. I wonder if we're going to have some poor person who went to Europe and unlocked their phone and then gets busted and gets some sort of fine levied or something like that.
Right. It's like 30 years in jail and $2 million.
Jamie
fine.
Thomas. Thank you, chat room. They got it. Yeah.
And I'm also forgetting the name too, but the person who hacked the PlayStation 3 and he just got, he just got slammed by Sony after hacking the PlayStation 3.
Yeah. The chat room, Doogie in the chat room actually does point out that the law only applies to subsidized phones, which is a good point, but still, that's got to be the majority of the phones out there. The price tag makes buying an unlocked phone somewhat prohibitive for most people.
Which is funny, because that's the reasoning that the Librarian of Congress used, was that unlocked phones are available. You know, unlocked non-subsidized phones are available, much like, you know, a Mercedes available to you, Ron. and they said that also there's so much competition and the market is moving so fast that, you know, it's no longer necessary to allow people to unlock their phones, which I ask Leo how competitive wireless carriers are, how great and fluid the market is.
Right. And it's really rough because this really doesn't seem to empower the user. You know, it seems like the user is the one who's getting put into the corner and being told how they can behave, which really, you know, I know my personal belief is that the user should be allowed to do whatever you want with your technology whenever you want.
Sure. And it's not like you're not going to pay Verizon. You're not going to get hit with an early termination fee if you try to go to another carrier. It's still on you to pay for that phone however you choose to. It's just that now you have to also ask permission to go somewhere else with your phone or sell it.
Right.
It's a bummer.
Well, I'm sure we'll keep an eye on it, and it's nice to have the person who kind of broke the story on the show to talk about it. So thanks, Kevin. That's awesome.
Oh,
so.
Thank you.
All right, cool. Well, so moving on to some numbers. We've got a report out of the market for paid applications has hit over $8 billion in 2012, while average revenue per app drops 27%. So basically, that's kind of good news and bad news. It shows that the mobile app economy has shown impressive growth for 2012, that apps in general are growing, but at the same time, the revenue per app is dropping.
Yeah, I mean, I think the lesson especially for indie developers or developers who want to start kind of an indie shop is that, you know, that $1 million app, it just doesn't happen that often. It's basically like winning the lottery. When you have things like advertising, in-app purchases, you can generate more revenue from an app, but making a $1 billion from an app, unless you purchase by Facebook, of course, is probably not going to happen.
Well, and as much as I want to support developers' chance to make that $1 million app, I mean, I feel like that's almost like a reality check or course correction to match every other market out there. You know, like it's basically every time you make a venture, some sort of business venture, you hope to be the hit of your sector and make millions of dollars, but there's no guarantee that'll happen, and it takes luck and it takes skill and timing. And I don't think the app marketplace should be any different in that regard.
At the same time, though, it makes me sad. I wish that, you know, if there was an indie developer who's really good and makes really beautiful apps and charges a buck or two per app, you know, can someone really make a living, you know, making apps? I mean, you'd have to have, you know, a couple of dozen apps selling, you know, selling pretty briskly at $2 or $3 a pop in order to support yourself and a couple of employees. And that makes me a little sad. You know, sometimes I look at the prices of apps and I think, like, we really messed this up. You know, we should pay a little bit more for good software. But most people don't want to pay at all for apps. A lot of people don't want to pay at all for apps, but certainly anything over $2 or $3 is expensive.
Yeah.
When I spend that much on a fancy coffee, pretty often, I sometimes feel like our perspectives are just a little skewed, a little off when it comes to this.
Oh, I totally agree. I think the value you get is a lot of, unfortunately, the market is pushing undervalued app. And it's interesting because I've done a lot of work and I work in publishing and digital publishing, and the model for, like, ebooks, you know, via Amazon Kindle or iBooks, like, those are priced correctly. Like, an ebook on Amazon Kindle can cost you $8.99, $9.99, $12.99. You know, I've seen some ebooks upwards of $29.99, $39.99, depending on the content. And people are paying that. So for some reason, there's a perceived value of a book that you're getting in digital form. But if you took that same book and made an app out of it and charged more than 99 cents or free, you would never get any success.
And the amount of work that goes into building a good app is, you know, is, I think, comparable to writing a book, as someone who's made both an app and a book. If you're measuring it by the amount of work. But yeah, and I think ebooks got priced that way, really, because Amazon kind of set that bar early on, right? It was $9.99 from the outset.
Yeah, it was all those publisher battles. So Kevin, you're a publisher. What do you make of that? Is the marketplace undervalued?
I think that it's just matured, and I think that now a major skill for app developers is going to be marketing and, dare I say it, kind of SEO type things. I think it's so hard to get your app noticed now, and almost every category of type of app is so filled and suffused with apps that I think you just have to either figure out a way to be noticed by, you know, blogs or you know, media or whatnot, and get your name out there, or have a ridiculously clever app that hits some niche that nobody knew they were, you know, was being looked for. I just think it is a mature market now, and I think that you have to kind of have this different set of skills that maybe not every genius app developer has, you know. So I like you guys, I'm pretty sad at the idea of a pretty great and relevant and best of class app just languishing in obscurity.
Yeah. So before we move on, some interesting notes in regards to specific to Google Play. Google Play revenues were up 311% overall from January 2012, and downloads were up 48%. So that's some promising improvement on the Google Play Store, which is probably attributed to the increased number of devices and tablet proliferation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's great for Google.
That's for sure.
Some more numbers. Analytics firm Localytics just released some new numbers, which said that the 59% of all Android tablet usage comes from the U.S. And the Amazon Kindle Fire is responsible for like half of that, right? So the Amazon Kindle Fire and the Kindle the Fire HD tablets aren't released, are generally are available in the U.S. They aren't really available at other places. So it's possible that this big Android tablet usage number being focused on the U.S. is due almost entirely to the Amazon Kindle. This is kind of interesting that, you know, and of course the TechCrunch headline is, you know, the forked Amazon Kindle Fire is the most popular Android tablet brand, kind of a little bit of a punch at Google, right? And kind of related to this, some more numbers, Android and iOS grabbed 92% of global smartphone shipments. So we really have like a two-horse race here, but Android is the undisputed volume leader. So first, I don't know, maybe we should parse the first story, which is that the Kindle is the most popular Android tablet here in the U.S. Just this past this week, Sam Biddle at the Gizmodo wrote this opinion piece about basically saying that Android is popular not because it's good, but because it's cheap. Which I actually thought that headline, he could have changed the headline to say like Android's a better value, right? So like you get a lot more for your money. You've got the great device for less money. And this kind of jives with this Kindle Fire issue, right? That the Kindle is the most popular tablet because for a long time it was the cheapest Android tablet.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of that headline could be reworded. I almost would say affordable, instead of Cheap. Yeah, because
yeah, right. Because Cheap does have some.
as someone yeah. who just bought much to my better judgment, bought an iPad Mini for someone for a birthday. That sticker shock was painful. When I was thinking about what I could have gotten for my money on the Android platform. So
using a photo of a homeless man sleeping in an alley tipped over a shopping cart was also a choice.
Yeah.
To illustrate that story about how Android is cheap.
Yeah, I mean, it was very sensationalized. The headline was sensationalized, but I actually thought that the point was that Android offers a better value for most people switching to smartphones. I think that that's actually like a solid point. It's actually one of the things that I love about Android. Is it feels like the OS of the people. You know, this is that whole the class issue around.
It's the people's operating system.
Exactly. Even though most of the people are still on Gingerbread, but that's another issue.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I wasn't surprised at all by those Kindle numbers, because if you ask me, even though, you know, as we'll criticize it being forked and it being its own, you know, kind of walled garden of Amazon stuff, it has been the strongest brand up to this point in terms of a tablet base. And we talk about this on the show a lot. Jason and I talk about it, how Amazon has this intensely loyal customer base who use Amazon Prime and shop on Amazon. I'm one of them. I love Amazon. You know, and so they're like, all right, I need a tablet, I'll just get a Fire. And you know, while we bust on it and people in the know kind of bust on it, I know people at Amazon, it's working. Like their whole strategy is totally working at this point. So I'm not surprised. I'm curious to see what these numbers will look like after the Nexus 10 gets a few more months under its belt and see how sales on that go.
Amazon also can keep products in stock.
Yep.
When you buy a Kindle Fire, it's always available 2 days later.
Yep. Like, right, it will be at your doorstep instantaneously.
It may be the cheap tablet, but it's also the tablet that exists in physical form, as opposed to the Nexus 4 and, you know, the larger Nexus 7s and things like that.
Yep.
Good point. The Android iOS, 92% of smartphone shipments in Q4, that was of last year. That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, when people say to me like, hey, are you going to build your app for Windows Phone or BlackBerry? I'm always just like, no. I mean, it just seems very clear that this is a two-horse race at this point in terms of mobile operating systems, for better or for worse. So that didn't feel like news, but it kind of, for me as a developer, kind of confirmed like, okay, these are the two platforms that are dominant right now, and the ones that really you got to show up on if you're developing.
Totally. When they write the book on this era of communication and technology, it's going to be how RIM blew it, basically.
Yeah.
You know, RIM had such a firm positioning on, you know, with in the IT departments and stuff like that, you know, 5-6 years ago, and now it's like you see someone with a BlackBerry, and you kind of do a double take, like, really, BlackBerry? You're going to use that?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely a two-horse race at this point now.
Story just came out today that 62% of Dell employees have BlackBerries.
I'm not surprised by that at all. And isn't Dell having financial trouble at the same time?
doesn't Dell make their own phone called the Streak?
They do. That's a good point.
Why don't they give their own employees their own phone?
Wasn't like one of the big upgrades for employees at Yahoo was like getting rid of the BlackBerries and like letting them have an iPhone or an Android phone? I feel like that was one of Marissa Meyer's first moves as well. So I don't know. Is BlackBerry as corporate phone like the first sign of a dying company? I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, geez. So some other little news bites to move on. Forbes magazine was reporting a report by a UK market research firm called TrendStream updated their global web index of applications. And not too surprising that Facebook was the number one social platform with active usage. But what might be surprising was that number two was Google+, and number three was YouTube. So Google seems to be gaining in the social market, which we know was a huge goal of theirs about a year ago. Again, we might make fun of Google+, but it looks like it's gaining momentum. And with some of the changes that YouTube's made, it looks like it's becoming more of a viable social platform than just a video delivery service. Interesting to see Twitter. You know, I've seen a lot of rumblings that Twitter really isn't as popular as those of us who are loyal to it like to think. And I think that might be right. So.
Yeah, the YouTube number doesn't surprise me. The Google Plus number surprises me a little bit. I mean, just because, you know, I go on Google Plus and I mean, a lot of my professional contacts are on Google Plus. I work in tech, but still not seeing the family and friends uptake. So I wonder if they're measuring this activity by going to plus.google.com or just interacting like plus one-ing things around the web or kind of signing in with your Google Plus account into other Google properties.
I have to think that's the case. The kind of confluence of all those different Google tools that have Google Plus-ish features, including YouTube itself.
Yep. And the thing is also is how they define active usage. I mean, is the interaction on Google Plus, the number of steps it takes to do something, is it more than on YouTube? You know, like the interaction on Twitter is fairly, it's not passive, but it's not as aggressive as Google Plus or Facebook might be. You know, and plus also you look at the various functionalities that they offer. You know, Google Plus rolled out events. You know, they're doing more with photos, you know, and Facebook has events and photos and all that sort of thing, where YouTube is mainly just videos and comments. Twitter is just posting and reading. So it's what that active usage is defined by.
And I mean, I think looking at this graph, I think the most kind of striking thing about it is, like, Facebook is far and away number one. Like, Facebook double Google Plus. Like, it's not even, no one's even touching them, right? Whereas, you know, second position, this headline is about how Google Plus is in the second position. And really, Facebook is just so far out there. Everybody else is kind of close together after that.
Yep.
But good for Google Plus, I guess.
I like how, wait, Chad, can you pull that back up? I like how Orkut is still placing, and it's above Tumblr.
Okay, that's a little suspect.
Hey, man.
No, it's huge in Brazil,
right? Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm surprised they haven't folded it into Google Plus yet, though, but I guess the Orkut, those Brazilians are holding on for dear life.
That brand, man. Yeah.
Well, there's also this other one, which is a little bit suspect, right next to Twitter. None of the above. Is that a social network site?
I love that social network, by the way.
Is that? I don't even know.
I use that one all the time.
Yeah.
Getting an invite there is very tough. Huh.
Apparently, it's not.
I'm confused by that one.
All right. And a little news about Amazon.
Yeah, the last story here in the news section. Amazon purchased the Ivona software. Am I pronouncing this correct? Ivona software, a Polish-based specialist in voice technologies. Ivona, I'm going to go with that. Ivona is already using the Kindle Fire for their text-to-speech voice commands and Explore by Touch features. So Amazon has just acquired the company, and Ivona's APIs are still going to be available out to other businesses, like other companies can still use them. And TechCrunch, the terms of the deal weren't disclosed. TechCrunch sort of thought, hey, you know, does this mean that Amazon is now competing with Siri on iOS? Does this mean that Amazon's going to be putting out their own smartphone with more voice commands? I don't know. I guess we'll see. I think it probably makes sense. It seems like if those features are getting a lot of usage and they want to expand their text-to-speech features, it makes sense that they would just acquire the company. Why not?
Yeah, it seems to be a trend. And this actually was one of Jason's arena picks back last year, I believe. And I'm pretty sure it was a big fail when he tried to use it. But
yeah.
It was...
Well, we can play a clip from Ivona.
Let's hear it.
Ivona. Hi, I'm Sally, a text-to-speech voice created by Ivona. I will read for you everything you want. Enter here any text and click play.
She will read everything I want.
I will read your desires.
Everything I want. Can we just plug in the email and have her read it?
Yeah.
Oh, we totally should do that.
Well,
that would make PR pitches sound so lascivious.
Oh, man. Yeah, do you want me to go ahead and do that?
Yeah, let's do an email. We got an email. So this is an interesting – I love when this happens. We talked about something on our last episode. Specifically, we talked about XBMC, the Xbox Media Center project, and one of the folks who work on it wrote in, Jez X wrote in, and let's hear Sally tell us what Jez X had to say.
Now, it does
take – Hi, guys. Halfway through watching episode 93 of All About Android, right at the point you mention XBMC, which I work on, and feel the need to point out the build you mentioned was not actually released by Team XBMC, but was a hacked up version at Don B.
So, there's a character limit.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll pick it up from here. That was pretty cool.
That was pretty good, though.
It wasn't bad. I don't think that Jez X sounds like that, just a guess, but she actually did a pretty good job.
Yeah, and I liked how she pronounced XBMC as opposed to trying to say X-Booms.
X-Booms.
And the parenthetical thing was actually kind of parenthetical. Which
I'm really impressed by that, actually. Way to go, Ivona. But so, anyway, so to pick up the rest of the email. So Ivona wrote in and says that felt the need to point out that the build we mentioned was not actually released by Team XBMC, but was a hacked up version done by a third party website to use an external player for all media, in this case, MX Player. Team XBMC does have some proper builds with built-in hardware decoding for videos and testing currently. And if you follow CyanogenMod on Google+, you'll see that they also have these proper builds working on the Nexus Q, as well with CyanogenMod 10.1, playing back videos nicely like you mentioned you might like to try. I scrolled down. So while we're not quite ready for full public deployment on Android and in the Play Store yet, we're getting closer. Best to take your time and do things properly than rush out rubbish. So I agree there, JezX. Thank you for the clarification. And we look forward to the completed project. I know as soon as it comes out, I'm going to install it. So,
go Team XBMC.
Yeah. So I want to take a quick moment to talk to you about, to thank our sponsor and to tell you about Bespoke Post. I'm sure you loyal Twit viewers have heard about Bespoke Post so far. It is basically a subscription club for men. It's a great way to pay a little bit a month and have this great box of stuff come to you. They have a team of experts that scour the world to discover the best and most unique products around. Then each month they send you a themed box of awesome to members filled with these amazing products and experiences. They also give you tips on the best way to utilize them. You can see all the past boxes over at bespokepost.com/box/past. And past boxes have included coffee kits, cocktail sets, a shaving kit, and tons more like that. So if you're a man and you're looking for really – and if you know about Bespoke, I actually worked for St. Regis Hotels for a few years, and Bespoke was a word they used a lot, the Bespoke experience, and it's all a tailored custom experience. And it looks like Bespoke Post is definitely picking up in that vein. So the cost is $45 per box with free shipping and easy returns. The retail value of the boxes is way more than the $45 monthly subscription, so you're getting a lot for your dollar. At the beginning of each month, they let members know what their limited edition selection is, and they can opt out and not be charged for that month's box if you don't want it, so you've got a lot of flexibility there in terms of what you actually do get. It's also a great gift for the men in your life. If you're looking for a unique gift that probably they've never received before, you can buy a one-month gift box for $50, 3 months for $135, or half a year is $270. So if you've got that hard-to-shop-for guy in your life and you're looking for something that he's never even heard of before, check out Bespoke Post. And you can see that all at bespokepost.com/twit. If you sign up now, you get 20% off your first month subscription of $45. And again, that's at bespokepost.com/twit. And I actually have a box, and I want to show you guys what it includes, because this box is pretty rad, if I do say so myself. So everybody's got different interests. I know a lot of my male friends actually are very into fashion and very into shoes. And I know that the fact that Bespoke Post has teamed up with the French brand Saphir to make some of the finest products to ever touch leather. Ensure your kicks receive the TLC they deserve and spend as little as 5 minutes a month and your shoes can last a lifetime. So I'm going to open up the box here and we're going to see what we got. See, a little box of awesome.
Hashtag box of awesome.
Well done. So here, the whole Saphir shoe experience is contained in this box. This is very nice.
I never say this, but this kind of makes me want to be a dude.
Yeah, this has got a little latch here, and we open it up, and you've got some of the best shoe maintenance stuff that you could have. Shoe polishes, nice little shoe brush here, other little brushes to get the little details in there. Basically, it's got, to break it all down, Renovateur is got the heralded jack of all trades. It cleans, conditions, shines, and protects. Use it as an initial treatment before creams and waxes, or as a great one product does quick fix or travel item. It's got buffing brushes, applicator brushes, wax cotton colorful shoelaces right here. Listen, I got to tell you, I need to shine my shoes. I went to a wedding a couple weeks ago, and I looked down. I was embarrassed. And if I had this box, I wouldn't have been embarrassed. They would have looked great. So if I was a member of Bespoke Post, I would have been my shoes would have looked great at that wedding, and I wouldn't have been embarrassed in publicly. So there you go. So buy bespokepost.com, $45 a month. Get 20% off your first purchase, bespokepost.com/twit, and don't be embarrassed like I was. So there you go.
Nice.
So we're going to put that over there, and we're going to move on with the show.
I like any ad that involves, like, lots of my male friends are into fashion and shoes. Like,
they are. I mean, they are. Good. My best friend, my college roommate, he was often the one very embarrassed by my presence socially, because he just would – he'd look at me and he'd go – literally, we'd wake up and I'd get dressed and he'd go, really? That's what you're going to wear today?
So, wow.
Anyway. All right. So let's dive into hardware. All right, we love leaks, and we love when we get some information before we're supposed to, and the Galaxy Note 8 specs were leaked recently, and we've got some images ahead of the launch. The Galaxy Note is the big surprise piece of hardware that we made fun of when the Note first came out, but it seems to have taken off. So with the Galaxy Note 8, what you've got is you've got an 8-inch display with 1280 by 800 resolution, a 1.6 gig quad-core processor, 2 gig of RAM, either 16 or 32 gig of storage, a 5-megapixel camera, a 1.3-megapixel front-facing camera, microSD support. It's got Wi-Fi, GPS, 3G support, Bluetooth, USB, all that great stuff. Only weighs 330 grams, so it's pretty light. And the big question is, it's running Android 4.2 Jelly Bean, and it's got the S Pen. So if you were looking for a Galaxy Note that was bigger than a Nexus 7, your dreams just came true.
Wait, is it a phone too?
Yeah.
What?
A phablet.
It's a phablet.
It's a phablet.
At this point, it is a tablet that has a phone in it. That's what I keep saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's it's funny how none of those pictures actually have somebody holding it up to their face. Like that's the money shot. That's what we want to see, right?
That is probably on purpose.
Yeah, probably because it looks ridiculous.
I guess you're just using speakerphone.
Still not convinced about this 8-inch size. I really want to hold one of these and see if it's. I suspect that 7 inches is it for me, but. I gotta try it first before I can decide. It's 8 inches feels just a little too big for the one hand.
What are you talking about? 3 more inches and it's a MacBook Air.
No,
exactly.
Yeah, but that's a whole different thing.
I feel like
it's only 3 inches away.
I feel like marketing just at NBA players is not a wise decision. But I seriously think that once you get over 7 inches, it is a phone, it is a phablet, it should ship with a Bluetooth earpiece or some sort of thing to promote not using it like that.
Yeah. I wonder if it should go with a headset or something that, you know, or even just ear. I don't know. The Bluetooth headset is a little too. I don't know if I could pull that off. But maybe just, you know, just that the headphones would have a speaker in them, you know, to talk on the phone with.
You know what they need to do? They need to make a S Pen Bluetooth headset hybrid
that slides into the device.
Yeah. So if it slid into the device and it's an S Pen, or you collapse it and put it in your ear, it's a Bluetooth earpiece.
Okay. I was going in the way of, like, you have an S Pen and then you also have this other device. Because, like, I don't want to get, like, earwax on my S Pen.
Yeah. Well, what if you have, like, a little earpiece, like a little thing that goes in your ear, and then you have the S Pen, and the S Pen, the top of the S Pen has a mic.
You know what? That would be cool. Yeah, mic on your S Pen.
Yeah.
And then maybe...
You guys sound like the Samsung development team.
I know. We're just giving these ideas away, Samsung.
Listen,
you can have them.
They're free. They're here. Yeah. Maybe you put the S Pen, like the pen part of it, into something else. And you stick it in your ear.
You put the S what in?
S Pen.
S Pen?
Yes.
The pen?
The pen.
I love the way you
S Pen?
A pin. That's a good idea,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You see? Yeah.
Oh, come on, y'all.
Samsung, call us. We're full of good ideas.
The S Pen is actually kind of cool. I got a chance to try it. It's kind of magnetic-y, kind of. I thought that I would be absolutely against a pen on a tablet or a large phone, but I actually really liked it a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah. Cool. So we'll see. We'll see when we get it, when it finally gets officially launched, how it looks and how ridiculous it is.
In the meantime, something you can buy right now, the Nexus 4 is back in stock at the Google Play Store. I think it's a week since Larry Page did the Google's quarterly earnings call, and he said something along the lines of how they really needed to work on their supply chain. That was clearly a reference to the Nexus 4 being out of stock for a really long time. The 8 gig and the 16 gig, it says ships in 1 to 2 weeks. I really had to protect my credit card and not make this purchase today. I'm so tempted by the Nexus 4. I love the Nexus line. I can't quite justify. It doesn't feel that different from the Galaxy Nexus. Although I said that on Google Plus, and everyone said it's totally different. It's way better. So I don't know. Maybe I should pull the trigger. The bumper is also available. The rubber bumper for the Nexus 4.
Oh.
In stock. But you know what I really want to see in stock in the Play Store? The Nexus 7 dock. Have you seen this?
Just
a little dock for the Nexus 7. Someone did a review of it, somehow got their hands on it. It's not available anywhere. And it just kind of looks kind of cool. So anyway, Nexus 4, you can go get it right now. I thought that it might be sold out by the time we did the show, but still looks like it's shipping.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it's also available through Best Buy, right?
Yeah, Best Buy's website. Showed up on Best Buy's website with T-Mobile contract as well. And actually showed up on Best Buy's website before it showed up in the Play Store. So all the Android blogs were going crazy.
I'm not surprised by that. I'm on a Galaxy Nexus on T-Mobile, and I've been I've been like, I don't know if I need the 4. I'm happy with this one, but
yeah, they look really similar, right?
Yeah. But, well, ever since we got the Nexus 4 on the show when we unboxed Tony's, right? And Jason pointed out that the Nexus 4 lacked the slight curvature that the Galaxy Nexus has. Like, you know how it's kind of curves to your ear a little. And once he noticed that, I'm like, oh, I like that. I like that feature. I don't want a flat phone now. I've gotten used to the curved phone. So
yeah. Although that wireless charger is kind of cool.
Yeah, true. That wireless charger was very cool. All right. So as 2013 rolls on, I feel like it's not a week unless we've got a Google I/O rumor. And the latest rumor is that Google and Asus are going to unveil an updated Nexus 7 at Google I/O, and with the main upgrade being it's going to have full HD support with a full 1080p HD display. Other than that, there aren't any really firm details around that, or whether we're going to get a price drop or any sort of thing like that, or if it's going to, you know, if we're going to see an updated version of Android at Google I/O. But it's a safe bet if they do update Android at Google I/O, that probably the devices that they roll out are going to be running it as well. But we'll see. So start the rumor tracking now. Nexus 7 HD. You know, I don't know, all this HD stuff. Well, you see, I want to say academically it doesn't matter. Like, I like my Nexus 7. I watch video on it. I don't need an HD one. But then I think about when Jason had that the Droid DNA and how good that looked. And is it the kind of thing where I just don't realize how good it's going to look?
Yeah, like you're just like, right. You're living in the dark ages and you just don't even know what you can get.
Yeah, it's real easy to dismiss something. I don't know what it looks like until I see it. So
It makes complete sense, though, that Google would update the Nexus 7, right? Nexus 7, let's face it, one of the best devices that Google's ever shipped. It's a year that it's been out, right? They announced it the last Google I/O. It made complete sense that they would do an upgrade. Hopefully it's going to be a really great upgrade that's going to get people excited, and hopefully they'll have enough to ship when it gets released.
Yep.
I would drop the one of greatest and just go straight up greatest thing they've ever shipped.
Nice.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. Nice. I do too. I think it's the single, I just recommended it to somebody who's looking for a tablet. I'm like, you cannot go wrong with this device. It is one of the best tablets, period. You know, much less one that Google shipped or a product that Google shipped, but it's compared to all the other Android tablets, it's been the one that's made me put my iPad completely away. So.
Yep.
Cool.
Sorry. I've got the next story. Apologies. I'm getting used to the non Jason rundown. This is really good. We picked this story. The Amigo is spelled with two I's, by the way, a fitness bracelet for Android, tracks your workout. So this is another one of these kind of Fitbit, Jawbone, Nike Fuel devices that is kind of in a Kickstarter-like campaign. It's not Kickstarter. It's actually Indiegogo. But this is kind of a neat device. We put it in the rundown because it's going to ship for Android and iOS. So it's a bracelet that you wear that tracks your activity, and there's also a little device that you tie to your shoe, right? And the cool thing about the Amigo, what I really like about it, is that it automatically detects, based on your movement, what kind of activity you're doing, right? So you don't have to say that you're doing push-ups, or that you're on the treadmill, or that you're on the elliptical, right? It automatically senses that, and it transmits via Bluetooth to your device, the Android device or your iOS device, the stats, the information about what you're doing, and all kinds of data, from what I understand, heart rate and blood pressure and all that stuff, goes to your device real time, and it's totally social. So if you're on a run, your friends can see that you're running kind of right on the spot on this device. It looks really neat, and we added it to the rundown only because I just upgraded my my Fitbit, which is really basically just steps and sleep, and it's okay. But I think that the holy grail for these kinds of devices, and Ron, I'd love to know if you use any one of these fitness trackers and what you think, is getting it so that you don't have to do any data entry, right? That it just knows. It knows that you're asleep. You know, kind of with the Fitbit, you have to kind of say, hey, I'm going to sleep now. I'm awake now, which totally, once I had the baby, totally destroyed all my sleep data. So that's what I like about the Amigo. It kind of senses what you're doing right away, and it also is real time and social, is what they're saying, that your friends are gonna be able to see that you're doing this workout as well. So I don't believe the devices themselves are Android based, but they're saying that they're gonna ship an Android app and an iOS app when they ship. And I think that they've met their funding goal so far, but they're still looking for backers.
Yes, sign me up, totally. I mean, I had a Fitbit for a couple of weeks way early, like the Gen 1 Fitbit. and didn't really stick with me. And then all my friends were wearing the Nike Fuel Band and doing all that stuff, but the lack of Android support made me not. I'm like, well, I'm not going to do that. If it doesn't link up with my phone, I don't expect the bracelet or the device to run Android. Although that'd be neat. Wow, they blew past their goal. That's great. But being able to sync up with an Android app would be great. I would love, I go running, I go to the gym every day, you know, like I would love to be able to, and actually when we get to the arena, I have a manual way to track it. You'll see that. But, it would be great to just have, like you said, it's gotta be a no brainer, just something you wear, doesn't get in the way and just, tracks all your stuff. So, I mean, that's why I wanted to put this in the rundown. Cause I was like, oh, finally somebody remembered that, oh, Android exists and maybe we should develop for it. Unlike Nike. So
yes, unlike Nike.
Us pale, sallow, unexercising people just amazed at how crowded this market's getting.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's funny because, like, so you've got the Nike Fuel Band, you got Fitbit. There's a couple others out there that actually Mauricio, who we've had on the show before, he did a great write-up. If you just if you search Mauricio Balvanera on Google and Fitbit or Nike Fuel Band, you'll come up with his article, and he kind of compared them. And I think he compared them to like a regular pedometer that you track, a Nike Fuel Band and a Fitbit, and which one tracks better and all the information. A pretty good analysis. But yeah, the market is getting pretty wide about that. And it's clear that people want to be smart about their fitness. So.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the people in these videos are always super fit and strong and look like so, you know, so like such athletes. For me, this is just like, I'm the pudgy nerd who like loves data, right? Like, it's like, this is an aspirational item for me. I'm like, if I have this device, I will be really fit and go to the gym all the time, which isn't always the case. But the Fitbit definitely does motivate me to walk more. So I think there's something to, you know, that quantified self thing, right? Once you start to see the data, you start to behave a little differently. So
what's missing
really cool
from the market is tools for us who don't exercise but have lots of social media savvy friends who do. I want to be able to track when you all start failing. we're lacking tools that I can say, like, you know, the first it's like, oh, 6 miles, 4 miles, then 3 days later 2 miles, you're like, ha, 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 you lose, Eric, you nice. Lose
people who have abandoned the Fitbit. I wanted to be like, you know, Kevin hasn't gone anywhere for weeks.
Well, that's like those.
Sit down and have a donut, Kevin. Sit down.
Well, it's like those Wi-Fi enabled and socially enabled scales that will post your weight to Twitter and Facebook. I don't want any part of that. Like, that is not cool.
So, you don't ever see weights go up. You just see weights stop being posted.
Yeah, exactly.
Indeed.
All right. So one last little bit of hardware news. We saw at CES, NVIDIA made a big splash with their Project Shield, their Android-based gaming device, which is a big surprise. So I wasn't too surprised to see this news that looks like NVIDIA is going to start. They're going to leverage their Tegra chipset, and they're going to start making smartphones and tablets themselves. They're actually probably going to be white labeled devices. So if we started Android Show brand devices, we could go to NVIDIA and say, hey, we want your phone and your tablet, and we'll brand it with our own branding. But it's just one step closer to being a consumer brand. And the fact that they're doing Project Shield makes me wonder if NVIDIA phones or NVIDIA tablets are, you know, as a product on shelves, aren't too far off. So, interesting move by NVIDIA. All right, so let's move on to the apps.
The Pebble Smartwatch app for Android is now available. So the Pebble Smartwatch, I think you guys have talked about this on the show before, was that Kickstarter project, a smartwatch that wirelessly connects to your phone and gives you all kinds of information right there on your wrist. Well, for people who have backed the Kickstarter, the smartwatch has actually begun to ship. And so the app that goes along with it is also now available in the Google Play Store. And I don't know, are either of you guys a Pebble backers? Did either of you get
I am, but I'm way back in the queue.
Okay. How about you, Ron?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, so I believe that this app, I didn't install the app because I don't have the watch, but the app allows the smartwatch, it kind of shows, it lets you configure what the watch does and debug and set up, you know, what it displays and what information gets to it. I think it's kind of the bridge for developers to develop also for the watch. So once you get your smartwatch, you get the app on Google Play.
And from what I went to the press conference that they did at CES, and from everything I heard from developers and from the Pebble team itself, the Android app is just right out of the box, lots of interactivity, you know, no problems sending things back and forth, whereas iOS is quite a bit more restrictive somewhat more restrictive in what you can, you know, instantly do right away without developer tricks.
Cool.
It makes a lot of sense given, right, like that Android's always been better at that. Not to make this an iOS tracking thing, but Android's always
Oh, yeah, no. I just mean that, like, Android has intents. So, you know, any app can share to the Pebble if the developer wants to make it so. You know, iOS requires kind of only kind of iOS-centric apps can do that, really.
And that's not surprising that it'd be somewhat, you know, iOS would be somewhat limiting and Android would be more open. So I am intrigued by the Pebble, though. I've been keeping my eye on it, but it's nice to see them making this development. So cool. So for those of you who watched the longtime viewers of the show know that I'm a big fan of Google Wallet. Now that it's being adopted more and more, I'm at 7-Eleven and at Walgreens and other places. I've been using it more and more, more and more. So I was psyched to see that it got an update recently. Mainly the update was a more of a Holo-esque UI interface change, and it's also made some tweaks to address some issues with the Nexus 4. No new features, though, at all. It's mainly just, you know, ironing out bugs and updating the UI. But it's nice to see that Google Wallet is getting some love from Google, and they're still pushing for it to be a viable thing because I love it. It's just NFC is finally – so far 2013 has been the year that NFC has broken into something that I actively use and look for now. So wherever I see Google Wallet, I'm using it to pay for goods and services. So very cool. Are either you guys using Google Wallet or am I all alone there?
I haven't, but Kevin's an expert at using Google Wallet in Buffalo, New York, which I love his stories of using Google Wallet in Buffalo.
Is it bad?
The people at Burger King, Ron. The people at Burger King are not ready for it, Ron.
You see, that's my worry. I'll tell you, the people in San Francisco, you'd be surprised. They're not quite ready for it either. the woman at Walgreens looked at me like I was crazy when I was putting my phone against the thing, and I was like, no, Google Wallet. And so
When it works, it's like it's you're like living in Blade Runner. And then the 20-30% of times when it doesn't work, everyone in line is looking at you, and you look like you don't know how to pay for things.
That's the biggest problem is the public humiliation when you can't actually make it work. That's the biggest.
You look like you're trying to trade your phone, like barter it for toilet paper. Like, yep. Here you go. Take my phone, please. Need paper.
So a couple of weeks back on the show, we were talking about carbon backup, which I believe we're going to talk about in a little we talked about it previously on a previous show. And we were saying, wasn't there another app called Carbon? And sure enough, that Twitter app that was called, now it's called The Carbon. It was a bit of a vaporware product. There was a lot of buzz about it in last summer and in the fall, and then it kind of went away. Well, we've got our first look at what it looks like, and it looks to be the real deal and somewhat legit in terms of making a run at being the Twitter app. Currently, right now, it's Falcon Pro is the one that I love, but from the looks of this demo, I don't know if we want to play the video there, Chad. This looks to be quite impressive and could be the new hot Twitter app. What do you guys think of the Carbon?
I also really like the Carbon Backup app, so now I'm just 100% Team Carbon, apparently.
I really want this. I really, really want to try this. I have not found a Twitter client on Android that makes me happy. I tried Falcon Pro. I tried Plume. I tried the official Twitter app. On iOS, I use the official Twitter app. And what I loved about it is it would notify me if just my friends replied to me or favorited something of mine. And the official Twitter app on Android and Plume or Falcon Pro, none of them will tell me just that. Well, the official Twitter app will say, like, you have new interactions, but it doesn't take advantage of Jelly Bean's notification window and say, like, Kevin said this or Kevin favorited that. And I really, really missed that from iOS. So I've been just unhappy, like, with my Twitter client. Like, I feel like I interact so much less on Twitter now that I'm back on Android. So I'm kind of really hungry for a good, beautiful, good-looking Twitter app on Android. I think that aesthetics is actually pretty important to me. So in this, and actually Carbon looks really, really nice. I do think that it's a weird decision for a developer to get in the business of making a Twitter client at this point in time, given Twitter's announcements and direction and guidance to developers about making clients. I mean, Twitter's come out and said, like, please stop making clients. And if you do make a client, we're going to make your life really difficult. We're going to cap the number of tokens you can get, and, you know, we're going to have very stringent guidelines and requirements, no longer guidelines or requirements about how you can display tweets. So I don't know if they started the Carbon way before that guidance came out, or if they're just feeling like they're just going to go ahead anyway and that there's a hole in the market. I do think that there's a hole in the market. I think that in Android there's still room for a really, really great Twitter client, and I hope Carbon's it. I really want to try it.
Well, if the cap's 100,000 users, I mean, if you sell a Twitter client for $2 or $3, you know, good problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent that's a decent amount of money, right? But then you get to a place where you're like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm sorry, I can, you can no longer download my app because I don't have any more tokens.
It's a ceiling.
It's a ceiling.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, okay. I mean, I hope that they sell. I'm not sure if it's going to be free or if there's going it's going to be paid or if they've said yet. But it sure looks beautiful.
Yeah, and I think also I think the incentive for developers to make Twitter apps is that Twitter, you know, might buy you. You know what I mean? Like if you crack the nut better than they have, they've already shown a propensity to do that, to identify, you know, to find people in the marketplace who are doing things that are in line with what they want to do and picking them up. So that could be a way to do it.
Third party clients also get really interesting with the whole release of Vine this week, which I think we're going to talk about.
Well, that's a good segue. Why don't we just... So this is a glimpse at the carbon. We'll keep track of it. I know I'm going to be looking forward to using it. It does have my one gripe about Falcon Pro, which is multi-user support, multi-account support. So if it's got that, then and it looks pretty cool, I'll give it a shot. But let's hear about Vine.
Yeah, let's see. So Vine gets released this week. It's for iOS only. Vine is a video sharing social network, right? But the videos that you shoot, and it's an iOS app only, the videos that you shoot are 6 seconds long. And the video editor is very simple, lets you kind of just do a quickly cut together sort of portrait of what's going on, right? It's not the kind of video where that you're going to be talking or it's going to be very long. It's just sort of like a slice of life type thing. And so if you're not on iOS like me, you start seeing a bunch of these Vine links if you spend a lot of time on Twitter in particular or general most social networks. You start seeing these Vine links and you click on them and you can watch this 6 second video. Very much like Instagram, Vine does not have a browsable web interface, right? Like you have to get to a video through a link on a social network, unless you go to vinepeak.com, which is really awesome. Just kind of just plays Vine videos one after the other. But so it's interesting, you know, we've talked on this show before about our frustrations, or I've talked about my frustrations, how I'm switching, being totally on Android, you have these really cool new apps, particularly very beautiful social apps launch, things like Path and things like Vine, and they almost always launch on iOS only, right? And then you have that Instagram effect where all your friends are doing this thing on this service and you can't participate. The only way that you can participate is just by looking at the thing, right? Only seeing the picture, clicking on the link. And that's basically on Android right now. That's what you can do, right? You can see the Vine videos, but you can't post them yourselves. Vine looks really cool. I actually broke out the iPhone just to kind of try it out because I was interested to see what the video editor was like. And I really quite like it, but again, really frustrated that it's not on Android or it didn't launch on Android as well.
Well, yeah, that's one of my thorns in my sides, one of those sticking points, and I've ranted about it. I think Gina, you've already heard me ranted about it once, but I'll subject Kevin to it. Why you don't develop for both platforms is beyond me. Like millions of users. Like I understand iOS is sexy and you can do all this fun stuff and all that stuff, but why you wouldn't do parallel development? You know, you put a team that's working, you know, cross-platform, you know, you can make the apps. Instagram has proven that you can make an app that is essentially a duplicate from platform to platform. You can do it. It's possible. But why they choose to launch it just on iOS is so beyond me. I understand that for smaller developers, it's better to focus on one platform and you really refine it and then you get some more funding and as you grow. But Twitter, the building they're in on Market Street now, it's huge. They've got hundreds of people working there. Come on.
Unless it was intentionally to limit the initial audience, but I mean, it's still a pretty huge audience, I guess.
Yeah.
Things like interesting, like the hype that they get. Like part of me is like, oh, remember back when Flickr said that they supported video and users were upset because there was a limit on how long the video could be. It was much longer than 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Time, you know, our conception of video sharing was YouTube, you know, that you could watch these like 10-minute videos online. And so, I don't know, I got a little frustrated, like, oh, this is Instagram all over again. It's like, oh, a picture and a filter, and it's iOS only on a non-browsable website. Like,
But I do think it's interesting that you're right. Flickr had supported video, and we've seen video here and there, but I wonder if the market wasn't mature enough to the point where, you know, were the phones able to handle video processing and video, encoding and decoding and that sort of thing, the data network. Support, you know, is now the time where mobile video becomes viable. And so to that point, when you, Gina, when you put in the story about Vine, I immediately thought of a couple of weeks ago, a buddy of mine This guy on Twitter, at Agent M, he's got like millions of followers. A lot of you probably follow him. He works for Marvel Comics. He's an Android guy, and we often trade apps, and he was using an app called Tout, which which came out this summer, very kind of quiet. But Tout is basically you can post 15-second videos that you take with your phone, and you can just burst them out there to Twitter or to Facebook or to social networks or on Tout themselves. And this was like a couple of weeks before I even first heard of Vine, and I was like, oh, wow. So I'm like, are people actually using this? Like, is this, you know, is video becoming mature enough on the phone? And then sure enough, here comes Vine. And I wonder if now this year, one of the trends we're going to see is mobile video becoming a viable platform. And then you got to wonder, is YouTube next?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah. I mean, it's interesting to see how this develops.
It seems like the hook with Vine and with Instagram, which I think are just really similar, it's just that one moves, is that you are able to create something very quickly, very easily, that's kind of artsy, that makes you feel kind of proud. You know, you can kind of turn your life into a 6-second kind of reality show and post it instantly. I think that the real innovation is the way that you shoot the videos, and that you're able to kind of quickly cut very simply. Like when you take the video, you tap your finger to the phone screen, and it takes video, and then you let go and it stops, which makes it really, really easy. So I mean, I brought up the Flickr thing. You know, Flickr didn't have the creation tools that we have now in our pockets. Yeah. You know, Flickr had this concept of like, here's a moving portrait of life. Like, I don't know if you guys are Harry Potter fans, but you know, like all the portraits on the walls like move a little bit. That's kind of what I think about with the Vine video. It's just kind of like a photo, but that like moves a little bit.
I think,
and so like I like that concept a lot, but now we have phones that let us make those things and make them seem kind of artsy and cool very quickly, like an Instagram filter that we didn't really have before.
I think a lot of apps like this are also the still in the blast radius or fallout zone of Snapchat, you know, which is in video as a photo, but it's that idea of this brief moment that is captured that is almost, you know, like it's captured, viewed, and then goes away.
Yep.
And you got to wonder whether Snapchat or the Facebook Poke app or whatever are planning on rolling out video next, you know, and so I don't know. I have no need for this stuff. I mean, I do, I guess. I have Tout on my phone, and I might play with it a little bit. But I don't know if my life is interesting enough that I have to share it with it in that regard. I think Vine is interesting in its editing capability, and like you said, make this little artsy slice of your life. I just think 6 seconds is too short.
So, yeah. With Tout, it kind of like I was watching the video for Tout. Like people use it to like submit questions to, you know, a TV news program, or it feels like a video that you have to kind of say something or something has to happen. Whereas with Vine, the expectation is like, I'm just going to show scenes where like nothing really is happening, but they're just kind of pretty. You know, it just takes the pressure off, the creation pressure off.
Right.
Oh, sorry. Just lost my video.
Yeah, Chad, we lost Gina.
It makes those videos from concerts much more bearable, where I'm going to have to watch like 26 seconds of terrible audio and like lights that are ruining the filter and bad white balance. Like now I can just watch 6 seconds of it and be like,
it's true.
That's what it looks like to be in a crowd of people. All done.
I like your blunt approach, your truthful approach there, Kevin. I like that.
Well, as an Android user, like Gina said, I mean, all I've got is viewing. I get to watch my own birthday party. I can't do it myself. I can't capture it myself, but I can watch what other people thought about it. That's it.
I just.
Go ahead, Ron.
I was gonna say, I just feel like the 6-second burst and edited or whatever doesn't really get any ideas across. It does get an impression of what's going on around you, but I feel like, you know, I don't know. Maybe I just haven't seen enough, you know, good vines. You know.
There are not many that are narratives where anything happens. It's just kind of like a picture. But, you know, Kevin, your birthday party this past week, the reason why I knew it was your birthday is because Google told me, which was definitely a change. Normally Facebook tells me, I like went to the Google homepage and it said, today is Kevin and Stephen Levy's birthday. And I was like, oh, and suddenly it was like, oh, Google Plus actually is a thing. You're not a social network unless you tell your friends that it's, you know, tell someone's friends that it's their birthday.
That Google Plus birthday integration it's aggressive. Because it makes you realize how much you use Google, because I saw it and I didn't dismiss it. I ignored it. But then like by 10 o'clock, I'm like, all right, I know it's his birthday. Jeez.
Exactly. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I know. I like it. Yeah. Cool. So our last little bit of app news is game related. When we were talking about CES and we were talking about Project Shield and things like that, I made the point of saying, you know, all these, you know, Android-based gaming platforms are great in that they can run games, but really they're not going to be a success unless we've got games to play them on. And so it was really interesting to see Ouya, who is a Android-based game platform that you plug into your TV, really cute, I want to say cute, but neat little device that they developed, and it was a Kickstarter, I believe. They hosted a create game development competition, and they got 166 game prototypes from the competition, from the development. There in the here on the screen in the upper left corner, you could see the Ouya, the kind of box. It's this little square box with little rounded bottoms. But it's really interesting to see them kind of putting their money where their mouth is and hosting this competition, offering prizes, you know, like $45,000 in prizes contributed by supporters. And it just seems like it's a lot of fun. So Ouya is definitely promoting games to try to help. You know, of course, it's in their vested interest to make Android a viable gaming platform, but it'll be interesting to see whether it succeeds or not. I'm trying to get my hands on an Ouya. If I do, I'll bring it in. Have either of you seen it yet? Or
I have not. I'd love to play with it on the show.
Yeah.
Only the Kickstarter, you know, concept, I think.
I'm trying to work the back channels to sneak around the Kickstarter stuff and get one. So we'll see if we make that happen or not. But I'm infinitely curious by the Android gaming platform world. Not that I'm so much a gamer, just because I think it's the underdog of the underdog application of Android is gaming. So.
Worse than TV? More of an underdog than TV? Or yeah. About the same?
No, more of an underdog than TV. I really, because there's just so much competition in the marketplace, and there's so much, you know, like, why is it better than Xbox Live Arcade? Why is it better than PlayStation 3 Network? Why is it better than iOS? You know, like, there's so many different hoops that have to run. TV, I feel, is still a little bit of a Wild West. It's kind of anybody's game. Nobody's really broken through with that killer app for TV yet, and Android could do it. Google TV could do it, or some other flavor of it. But gaming is such a big iceberg that needs to be, like, you know, destroyed for Android to succeed there, so.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
All right, so with that said, let's dive into the arena.
The enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Got a little cut off there, Chad, eh?
Yeah. Sorry.
Do you want to run it again?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Hey, Jason's not here. Anything goes.
Let's go back into the arena.
Let's do it.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
I like the little accent he brought to it now with the new VO. It's like arena. It's
arena. Get the R roll in there.
Yeah. So let's take a look at last week's poll, episode 93. We had four apps in the mix, and I gotta admit, I'm kind of surprised I placed as high as I did. So our number one app was Plague Inc., which was the game that that Tony had, right, Chad?
Yeah.
That the game where you try to kill everybody.
Yeah. Where you unleash your plague on the world.
Yeah, I really
and you win when the world dies.
Yeah, that really disturbed me, but apparently everybody likes to kill people.
Oh,
so
yeah. It's a fun game.
37% of the vote with 215 votes, Plague Inc. Coming in second was the bizarrely awesome QM launcher with 33%. and then a real close race between Super Hexagon and Simple Dialer Widget, but with Jason's Super Hexagon edging it out for third place. And Gina, this is your, after winning your first 2 weeks, this is your first last place moment,
last
right?
Place. I either go big or I don't show up at all. So well, it didn't work out for me last week.
Welcome to the cellar. I love
how the comments on this poll are like, start with places like Greenland. They're hard to kill off once they close their borders.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And you can only get to them by water. They don't have an airport.
It's
as
very,
long as we all understand we're talking about a game.
Yes.
It's very risk-esque in that regard, isn't
it?
Yeah.
And then also you can start, like, getting into cold areas is hard, but Greenland is cold, so you have the whole game to infect the entireness of Greenland. Yeah. No, I played this way too much.
I'm shocked. So, all right. So that said, our tradition is that the loser goes first, so we're going to jump ahead. And Gina, you're going to give us your app first.
My app this week is Home Flip. It's a free non-launcher. And I'm going to call it a non-launcher in that it doesn't actually replace your launcher. Excuse me. But what it does is when you have Home Flip installed and you press the home button, instead of going to your home screen, Home Flip shows you a list of apps. And what you can do is you can affix a couple of apps that you use a lot at the bottom. So you tap on home and you see a list of apps, and you can affix apps by swiping them to the left. You can say never ever show me particular apps by swiping them off to the right. So it's kind of a nice way, or pruned kind of applications menu, let's say. And to get to your regular home screen, you have to double tap home, right? So single tap home to get the your Home Flip apps list, and double tap to go to your home screen. I'm actually not a big, I don't like to mess with the kind of regular stock launcher behavior, but I've been playing with Home Flip for the last couple of days. Oh, pro tip with Home Flip, the default skin, sorry, developer, just it's ugly. Go into settings and switch it to hollow, which I think I like the most. And I also changed the spacing between the apps to none, right? So you can see more apps in the list with no spacing. Once you change a theme, you change the spacing, you see a lot more. It looks a lot nicer. I really like this because if you're the kind of person who likes to keep your home screen like somewhat clear, like I like to keep widgets on my home screen, but I don't love to have like a ton of application shortcuts, because then I start organizing them in folders and then it's just crazy Wild West. Really, there's only like a handful of apps that I reach for all the time. That's what I like about Home Flip, is that you can just affix those apps to the list, and you tap home and you can switch them really easily. So it's free and it's ad free, and it's from a developer on XDA Developers. He says that it will remain free and ad free. Home Flip. That's it.
Cool. The launchers are a tough sell for me. Like when Android first came out, I was all about, you know, installing a launcher and making it all different and stuff like that. But then I just got really tired and I stuck with the stock launcher, and I'm not big on changing the launchers or changing any way that it does it. But I keep hoping that I find the one that's doing something different than I've ever thought about, and it'll make me want to switch over permanently.
We can do Home Flip, because Home Flip is kind of between your home button and the launcher, is that you can say, always launch this launcher on the double tap, you know what I mean? So you can say, go to Home Flip on one tap, on double tap, go to this other launcher. So you can stick to this stock launcher, or you can use your custom launcher. Home Flip is just kind of this like middleman.
It almost reminds me of, I know the chat room's going to jump on me all over it for it, but do you remember in Windows XP, you could put in little icons in the start bar and you could launch from there, and just like easy app launching? It almost reminds me of that. So.
Yep. It is kind of like that. It's true.
All right, so that's Home Flip, and you can get that for free in the Google Play Store. Kevin, do you want to tell us about your app, and I'll pull it up on here?
Sure, it's a simple calendar widget. At its core, it's a very, very customizable calendar widget that you put on your home screen. It has numerous sizes, which is really nice. I think it's also resizable in Android 4 and up. Yeah, it is. Basically, I really like it because, like so many of the apps I love, it has tons of customization features. I believe there's 4 skins built in. You can download more. If you think that, you know, the dates should be in 14-point Arial, and you think that the times should be in 12-point times, great, you can do that. But what I really like about it, especially this week, Gina won with an alternative calendar app called Agenda. And Agenda is a really awesome calendar app. I like it much better than the stock calendar. Simple calendar widget, besides looking really nice, giving you transparency, font, all kinds of options, you can also have it choose whatever calendar app you want it to launch when you tap on it. Even to the point where if you tap on a very specific event, it'll launch Agenda to that particular point in your calendar. So the quickest way I can recommend it is, if you're a calendar nerd like I am, if you know your calendar is always on your screen, it's the most important thing there. Simple calendar widget gives you a lot of options for how you display your day and how you want to respond. So it's definitely one of my must-haves.
Cool.
Yeah, it seems like if you like Agenda and you just miss the widget, that this is the widget to get to work with Agenda.
Boom. Yes.
It is pretty. I do like it. It really embraces the. More and more of these opacity, you know, kind of see-through widgets that are working better in the context of Android than trying to compete with it. I think that's the best way to go.
It's also very typography forward. It doesn't have fancy, you know, borders or, you know, shiny little things in the middle. It's just, you know, nice looking, well rendered text that shows what's going on.
Yep. Cool. So simple calendar widget, and that's for free. And those of you who voted for, what was it, agenda calendar?
Yep. Yep.
So mm-hmm. that's a nice pairing. You know, it's like a mm-hmm. a fine meal. A widget
like a Starbucks yes. treat.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Oh, Gina.
Sorry.
All right. So it looks like the theme for this week is free apps, as my app is free as well. It is one called Track This For Me. And basically what it is it's a simple, very pretty, Holo-inspired design way to track any sort of metrics in your life. It is not automated or in any sense. It's completely manual, but they do it so it's dead simple. Basically, if you are tracking your weight or tracking money or tracking any sort of, like, for instance, I track how long I run for. It's a good way to be able to quickly enter in data and then get some cool graphs and some visualizations out of it. So just opening it up here, you can see on the main page, you can see your various things that you're tracking. So, for example, I've got my running time and I've got weight. We'll go with my running time because it's a little more a little more impressive than my weight. No, but so here you see the whole it plots your data out on this graph. It gives you the information. It tells you what your minimum value is, your maximum, what the average is, what your total is. You can very easily add in new data. So here I'm going to say I went for a run back. It gives you a nice little Holo-inspired calendar access. I'm going to say back on January 18th, I ran for about, 25 and a half minutes. And you hit create. And it should add it to the – oh, wait, because I went too far back. Let me add something more recently. I'll do tomorrow.
Does the calendar have December in it?
Yes, it does.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, yeah, so here you go. So you can see now it pulls into that. It can show you the straight data elements that you've done. You can edit them or you can throw them away. You can look at the graph. You can look at a neat little dashboard that's actually a pro feature. So if you upgrade to the pro, you get more more graphing of your data, whether for minimum or maximum or average. So it's just a neat little way to keep track of things. So, you know, so for example, a lot of people in Weight Watchers or things like that, tracking their weight or, any sort of number that you would want to track, when you want to create a new one, it's real simple. You just add a new category and you can name it. So I can just say, you know, information, and you can add in what the symbol is. So whether it's minutes or pounds or ounces or whatever sort of, number that you want, you know, whatever the measurement is, you can do that. So, real simple to use, very pretty, very, you know, Android inspired. And it's just a great simple app, that is free and allows you to, anything that allows you to visualize your data, I love. So, and if you look in the examples here in the Google Play Store, if you go back the a screen there, Chad, you see they, you know, push-ups, SMS sent, number of messages you sent, number of users on your website, number of time studied. So, like, it's all these neat little ways to add in data. And what's interesting is that they do have a widget. So if you for example, here, if you want to go back to my screen. So here I've added the widget for my running time. So as opposed to having to open up the app and go to pick the category and go into the thing, you can just say, click on the widget and it will jump right to it. So very, very, very easy to use. And for free, it's pretty powerful. So
I'm going to start tracking how many Diet Cokes I drink a week.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's funny you mention that because I have a buddy who loves Dr. Pepper and works in Manhattan and goes to the bodega by his office every day and buys, you know, he said at least 3 or 4 Dr. Peppers on a daily basis. And in that downtime between Christmas and New Year's, I guess he calculated the number of Dr. Peppers he buys by the amount that he spends and figured out the dollar amount of what he spent on Dr. Pepper in the year. And that number made him stop drinking Dr. Pepper.
So, like, stop cold.
More exactly. So,
wow.
Yeah. So
Diet Coke and I have a very complicated relationship, but that would be inspiring. Once I started tracking it, I think I probably would be horrified.
Yeah. And I bet you he's not going to stick with it. I think if anything, he's just going to dial down to buying in bulk at Costco and then, you know, because
it's like having one a day, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Because when you buy at those bodegas, you're paying, like, you know, everyone knows my Snapple addiction. I pay like up to $3.50 for a bottle of Snapple when I could probably pay 60 cents per bottle at Costco. So, what are you gonna do? You never have what you want to drink when you need it. That's the problem. That's why those convenience stores will get you. So, all right. So that was our arena of free apps. You can vote for your favorite app in this week's poll. A little different URL this week. We're back at Bitly. So go to bit.ly/AAA94poll. So that's bit.ly/AAA94poll. So there in the chat room, you guys can get it. And you can go in and vote for your apps. Speak up. Let your voice be heard. And then next week, we will announce who won the arena. And we can rub it in. And hopefully Gina will lose again. So I'm just kidding.
Not right. Oh. Ain't right.
You raised the bar real early. But yeah, so we can see we've already got some great action going. It looks seems to be a pretty even race so far. So
I'm too invested in this poll. The moving bars. Yeah. Come on, people. Come on. Put me past Ron's bar. Our names are on it. So
yeah, I know that's different. Yeah, Chad put our names on it. Now it's really putting it out there. So.
Oops.
So yeah. So
did I mention all the different fonts on my apps, people? Come on. There's a lot of font choices.
You're not only voting for the app, but you're voting for your favorite person.
Oh, don't do that. You see the arena. See, what people don't understand is that the real reason why Eileen left the show is because the arena just got to be too much.
It got too much.
It just got to be way too much. And no.
Keep it with the apps, people. Keep it with the apps. Don't listen to me.
It brings out the worst in me. I'm sorry.
I shouldn't have left the name. Advice, and she said, get competitive in the arena.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, honor her, her presence.
And I know the folks in the chat room are upset that I didn't come up with a crazy app for this week, but I'm working on it. You can't make the crazy app happen. The crazy app has to come to you. That's what I've learned.
Okay.
So anyway. All right. So come back and join us next week when Jason will be back. I might not be here. I got to see what my travel schedule is going to look like, but Jason definitely will be back. And it'll be good to hand him back the center chair because Lord knows I am not good at it.
We'll be way more organized. You were great.
Oh, thank you. You guys helped me, truly. But so, Kevin, why don't you tell us where everybody can find you and what you got going on?
Okay, CompleteAndroidGuide.com is where the book is and the app is with all kinds of information about how to use your Android. Great for your friends who are not as savvy as you are, dear listener. And I also write about Android and other mobile stuff at IT World three times a week. That's where I posted about phone unlocking last week. So IT World and CompleteAndroidGuide.com.
Excellent. Awesome.
Sweet.
Gina?
Well, because Kevin's on the show with us, I absolutely have to plug Kevin's and my podcast on 5x5. Kevin and I do an audio podcast called In Beta. It's about mobile apps and web apps and open source. And it is not always, but sometimes it is about Android. And it airs on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific. And you can subscribe to that at 5x5.tv/inbeta.
I got to admit, I've been listening to more and more 5x5 shows. They're very interesting. So
yeah,
I've been enjoying them. So some good stuff there. So you can find me if you like what I do. If you like this, you can go to about.me/RonXO, which I do need to update. Maybe I'll do that tonight in the airport. But you can go to about.me/RonXO, and you can find my Twitter and my Facebook and Google Plus and all the fun stuff there. If you like comic books, check out ifanboy.com, which is a website I co-founded, but I'm no longer with because now I work at Image Comics. And you can see everything wonderful about Image Comics, including The Walking Dead, at imagecomics.com. And our show wouldn't be possible without our man behind the monitor. So Chad, pimp away.
Thank you. I was literally on every show today, that we recorded at the Brick House. So, just check out Twit, and I do my own show about Minecraft at omgcraft.com if you want to check that out as well.
My favorite Minecraft podcast.
Yeah.
I want you to put that on the website as like an out quote.
Ron's as favorite.
Like my favorite Minecraft themed podcast. Put it, Ron can, Richards, host all that Android.
Maybe if some of our producers are in the chat room, they can put it in the about section.
There you go.
Like under, what we do. Ron's favorite.
Listen, if you ever need me to record a bumper or some sort of intro or something like I'm Ron Richards and you're watching OMG, what is it? OMG
Craft.
OMG Craft.
your favorite show, you know that.
Oh. I thought mine. I was wanting to put the word in there.
Yeah.
Minecraft. Listen, it's not easy sitting in this chair. I'm sorry. All right. So
you did a great job.
Yeah. So thankfully it is over. If you want to get in touch with us, you can call us on our voicemail line at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can email and video mail us at AAA@twit.tv. And you can find us on Twitter at Android Show. Show notes, as always, will be at twit.tv/AAA, plus past episodes to our website, links to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/AAA. Android Show or All About Android. It's one of those things. We need to add that in here. But we're on YouTube.
Yeah.
We have our own channel, and it's awesome. And we're looking for subscribers. So you could join the Android Show army. But you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at about 5:30 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. I'm Ron Richards. This has been All About Android. Thank you for watching.